Chapter 3. Going Underground. St. Bartleby's School for Young Gentlemen. Butler had been in Artemis Fowl's service since the moment of the boy's birth. He had spent the first night of his charge's life standing guard on the Sisters of Mercy maternity ward. For over a decade, Butler had been teacher, mentor, and protector to the young heir. The pair had never been separated for more than a week until now. It shouldn't bother him. He knew that. A bodyguard should never become emotionally attached to his package. It affects his judgment. But in his private moments, Butler couldn't help thinking of the Fowl heir as the son or younger brother he'd never had. Butler parked the Bentley Arnage red label on the College Avenue. If anything, the Eurasian manservant had bulked up since midterm. With Artemis in boarding school, he was spending a lot more time in the gym. Truth be told, Butler was bored pumping iron, but the college authorities absolutely refused to allow him a bunk in Artemis's room. And when the gardener had discovered the bodyguard's hideout just off the 17th green, they had banned him from the college grounds altogether. Artemis slipped through the college gate, Dr. Poe's comments still in his thoughts. "Problems, sir," said Butler, noticing his employer's sour expression. Artemis ducked into the Bentley's wine-leather interior, selecting a still water from the bar. "Hardly, Butler. Just another quack-spouting psychobabble." Butler kept his voice level.
"Should I have a word with him?"
"Never mind him now. What news of the Fowl Star?"
"We got an email at the Manor this morning. It's an MPEG."
Artemis scowled. He could not access MPEG video files on his mobile phone.
Butler pulled a portable computer from the glove compartment. "I thought you might be anxious to see the file, so I downloaded it onto this."
He passed the computer over his shoulder. Artemis activated the compact machine, folding out the flat-color screen. At first, he thought the battery was dead. Then he realized he was looking at a field of snow. White on white, with only the faintest shadows to indicate dips and drumlins. Artemis felt the uneasiness rolling in his gut. Funny how such an innocent image could be so foreboding. The camera panned upwards, revealing a dull twilight sky. Then a black, hunched object in the distance. A rhythmic crunching issued through the compact speakers as the cameraman advanced through the snow. The object grew clearer. It was a man sitting on... no, tied to a chair. The ice clinked in Artemis's glass. His hands were shaking. The man was dressed in the rags of a once fine suit. Scars branded the prisoner's face like lightning bolts, and one leg appeared to be missing. It was difficult to tell. Artemis's breath was jumpy now, like a marathon runner's. There was a sign around the man's neck, cardboard and twine. On the sign was scrawled in thick black letters, "Strazvoyte sin." The camera zoomed in on the message for several seconds, then went blank.
"Is that all?"
Butler nodded. "Just the man and the sign, that's it."
"Strazvoyte sin,"
muttered Artemis, his accent flawless. Since his father's disappearance, he had been teaching himself the language.
"Should I translate for you?"
asked Butler, also a Russian speaker. He had picked it up during a 5-year stint with an espionage unit in the late 80s. His accent, however, was not quite so sophisticated as his young employer's.
"No, I know what it means," replied Artemis. "Strazvoyte sin. Hello, son."
Butler pulled the Bentley onto the dual carriageway. Neither of them spoke for several minutes. Eventually, Butler had to ask,
"Do you think it's him, Artemis? Could that man be your father?"
Artemis rewound the MPEG, freezing it on the mysterious man's face. He touched the display, sending rainbow distortions across the screen.
"I think so, Butler. But the picture quality is too poor. I can't be certain."
Butler understood the emotions battering his young charge. He too had lost someone aboard the Fowl Star. His uncle, the Major, had been assigned to Artemis's father on that fateful trip. Unfortunately, the Major's body had turned up in the Chersky morgue. Artemis regained his composure.
"I must pursue this, Butler."
"You know what's coming next, of course?"
"Yes, a ransom demand. This is merely the teaser to get my attention. I need to cash in some of the people's gold. Contact Lars in Zurich immediately."
Butler accelerated into the fast lane.
"Master Artemis, I've had some experience in these matters."
Artemis did not interrupt.
Butler's career before his current charge's birth had been varied, to say the least. The pattern with kidnappers is to eliminate all witnesses. Then they will generally try to eliminate each other to avoid splitting the ransom.
Your point being?
My point being that paying a ransom in no way guarantees your father's safety. If indeed that man is your father, it is quite possible that the kidnappers will take your money and then kill all of us. Artemis studied the screen.
You're right, of course. I will have to devise a plan.
Butler swallowed. He remembered the last plan. It had almost got them both killed, and could have plunged the planet into a cross-species war.
Butler was a man who didn't scare easily, but the spark in Artemis Fowl's eyes was enough to send a shiver crackling down his spine.
Shoot Terminal E1, Tara, Ireland. Captain Holly Short had decided to work a double shift and proceed directly to the surface. She paused only for a Nutribar and energy shake before hopping on the first shuttle to the terminal at Tara. One of Tara's officials was not making her journey any easier. The head of security was annoyed that Captain Short had not only put all chute traffic on hold to take a priority pod from E1, but had then proceeded to commandeer an entire shuttle for the return journey.
"Why don't you check your system again?" said Holly, through gritted teeth. "I'm sure the authorization from Police Plaza has arrived by now."
The truculent gnome consulted his handheld computer.
"No, ma'am. Ain't got nothing.
Look, Mr.
Commandant Terrell."
"Commandant Terrell, I'm on an important mission here, national security. I need you to keep the arrivals hall completely clear for the next couple of hours."
Terrell made a great show of almost collapsing.
"The next couple of hours? Are you crazy, girlie? I got 3 shuttles coming in from Atlantis. What am I supposed to tell them? Tore us off 'cause some LEP secret shenanigans. This is high season. I can't just shut things down. No way, no how."
Holly shrugged.
"Fine. You just let all your tourists catch sight of the 2 humans I'm bringing down here. There'll be a riot, I guarantee it."
"2 humans?"
said the head of security.
"Inside the terminal, are you nuts?"
Holly was running out of patience and time.
"Do you see this?"
she demanded, pointing to the insignia on her helmet.
"I'm LEP, a captain. No rent-a-cop gnome is going to stand in the way of my orders."
Terrell drew himself up to his full height, which was about 70 centimeters.
"Yeah, I heard of you. The crazy girly captain. Caused quite a stir up here last year, didn't you? My tax ingot's going to be paying for that little screw-up for some time."
"Just ask Central, you bureaucratic idiot."
"Call me what you want, missy. We have our rules here, and without confirmation from below, ain't nothing I can do to change them. Especially not for some gun-toting girly with an attitude problem."
"Well, get on the blower to Police Plaza, then."
Terrell sniffed.
"The magma flares have just started acting up. It's hard to get a line. Maybe I'll try again after my rounds. Just you take yourself a seat in the departure lounge."
Holly's hand strayed towards her buzz button. "You know what you're doing, don't you?"
"What?"
croaked the gnome. "You're obstructing an LEP operation."
"I ain't obstructing nothing."
"And, as such, it is in my power to remove said obstruction using any force that I deem necessary."
"Don't you threaten me, missy."
Holly drew the baton, twirling it expertly.
"I'm not threatening you. I'm just informing you of police procedure. If you continue to obstruct me, I remove the obstruction, in this case, you, and proceed to the next in command."
Terrell was unconvinced.
"You wouldn't dare."
Holly grinned.
"I'm the crazy girly captain, remember?"
The gnome considered it. It was unlikely the officer would buzz him, but then again, who knew with female elves?
"Okay," he said, printing off a sheet on the computer. "This is a 24-hour visa, but if you're not back here in time, I'll have you taken into custody on your return. Then I'll be the one making the threats."
Holly snatched the sheet.
"Whatever.
Now remember, make sure arrivals is clear when I get back." Ireland. En route from St. Bartleby's to Fowl Manor. Artemis was bouncing ideas off Butler. It was a technique he'd often used when trying to come up with a plan. After all, if anybody was an expert in covert operations, it was his bodyguard.
"We can't trace the MPEG."
"No, Artemis. I tried. They put a decay virus in with the email. I only just managed to get the film on disk before the original disintegrated."
"What about the MPEG itself? Could we get a geographical fix from the stars?"
Butler smiled. Young Master Artemis was starting to think like a soldier. No luck. I sent a shot to a friend of mine in Nasser. He didn't even bother putting it into the computer. Not enough definition. Artemis was silent for a minute.
How fast can we get to Russia?
Butler drummed his fingers on the steering wheel.
That depends.
Depends on what?
On how we go. Legal or illegal.
Which is quicker?
Butler laughed. Something you didn't hear very often.
Illegal is usually faster. Either way is going to be pretty slow.
We can't go by air, that's for sure. The Mafia are going to have foot soldiers at every airstrip.
Are we sure it's the Mafia?
Butler glanced in the rearview mirror.
I'm afraid so. All kidnappings go through the Mafia. Even if an ordinary criminal managed to abduct your father, he would have to hand him over once the Mafia found out about it.
Artemis nodded.
That's what I thought.
So we'll have to travel by sea.
That'll take a week at the very least. We could really use some help with transport. Something the Mafia won't expect. How's our ID situation?
No problem. I thought we'd go native. We'll arouse less suspicion. I have passports and visas.
Da.
What is our cover?
What about Stefan Bashkir and his uncle Konstantin?
Perfect. The chess prodigy and his chaperone.
They'd used this cover many times before on previous search missions. Once, a checkpoint official, himself a chess grandmaster, had doubted their story, until Artemis beat him in 6 moves. The technique has since become known as the Bashkir maneuver.
How soon can we leave?
Almost immediately. A Mrs. Fowle and Juliet are in Nice this week. That gives us 8 days. We can mail the school, make up some excuse.
I dare say St. Bartleby's would be glad to be rid of me for a while.
We could go straight to the airport from Fowle Manor. The Learjet is stocked. At least we can fly as far as Scandinavia and we could try to pick up a boat from there. I just have to pick up a few things at the manor first.
Artemis could imagine exactly the kind of things his manservant wished to pick up. Sharp things. And explosive things.
Good. The sooner the better. We've got to find these people before they know we're looking. We can monitor email as we go.
Butler took the exit for Fowle Manor.
You know, Artemis,
he said, glancing in the mirror.
We're going up against the Russian Mafia. I've had dealings with these people before.
They don't negotiate.
This could get bloody. If we take these gangsters on, people are going to get hurt. Most likely us.
Artemis nodded absently, watching his own reflection in the window. He needed a plan, something audacious and brilliant, something that had never been attempted before. Artemis was not unduly worried on that front. His brain had never let him down.
Tara Shuttleport. The ferry shuttleport at Tara was an impressive operation. 10,000 cubic meters of terminal concealed beneath an overgrown hillock in the middle of the McGraney farm. For centuries, the McGraneys had respected the ferry fort's boundaries, and for centuries, they had enjoyed exceptional good luck. Illnesses mysteriously cleared up overnight. Priceless art treasures unearthed themselves with incredible regularity, and mad cow disease seemed to avoid their herds altogether. Having solved her visa problem, Holly finally made her way to the security door and slipped through the holographic camouflage. She had managed to secure a set of cowboy double decks for the trip. The rig ran on a satellite-bounced solar battery and employed a revolutionary wing design. There were 2 sets, or decks, one fixed for gliding and a smaller set for maneuverability. Holly had been dying to try out the double decks, but only a few rigs had made their way across from Cowboy Labs. Foley was reluctant to let them out because he hadn't designed them. Professional envy. Holly took advantage of his absence from the lab to swipe a set from the rack. She soared 15 meters above the ground, allowing unfiltered surface air to fill her lungs. Though laden with pollutants, it was still sweeter than the recycled tunnel variety. For several minutes she enjoyed the experience, before turning her concentration to the mission at hand. How to abduct Artemis Fowle? Not from his home, Fowle Manor, that was for certain. Legally she put herself on very shaky ground by entering a dwelling without permission, even though, technically, Fowle had invited her in by kidnapping her last year. Not many lawyers would take your case on the basis of that defense. Anyway, the manor was a virtual fortress and had already seen off an entire LEP retrieval team. Why should she fare any better?
There was also the complication that Artemis could very well be expecting her, especially if he was trading with the Bois Kell. The idea of walking into a trap did not appeal to Holly. She had already been imprisoned once in foul manner. Doubtless her cell was still furnished. Holly activated the computer navigation package, calling up foul manner on her helmet visor. A soft crimson light began to blip beside the 3D plan of the house. The building had been red-flagged by the LEP. Holly groaned. Now she would be treated to a video warning, just in case there was one recon officer under the world who had not heard of Artemis Fowl. Corporal Lily Fromm's face appeared on the screen. Of course they chose Lily for this assignment. The bimbo face of the LEP. Sexism was alive and well and living in Police Plaza. It was rumored that Fron's LEP scores had been bumped up because of her descendancy from the Elfin King.
"You have selected foul manner," said Fron's image, fluttering her eyelids. "This is a red-flagged building. Unauthorized access is strictly forbidden. Do not even attempt a flyover. Artemis Fowl is considered an active threat to the people."
A picture of Fowl appeared beside Frond, a digitally enhanced scowl on his face.
"His accomplice, known only as Butler, is not to be approached under any circumstances. He is generally armed and always dangerous."
Butler's massive head appeared beside the other two images. Armed and dangerous hardly did him justice. He was the only human in history to have taken on a troll and won. Holly sent the coordinates to the flight computer and let the wings do the steering for her. The countryside sped by below. Even since her last visit, the Mud People infestation seemed to have taken a stronger hold. There was barely an acre of land without dozens of their dwellings digging into its soil, and barely a mile of river without one of their factories pouring its poison into the waters. The sun finally dipped below the horizon, and Holly raised the filters on her visor. Time was on her side now. She had the entire night to come up with a plan. Holly found that she missed Foley's sarcastic comments in her ear. Annoying as the Centaur's observations were, they generally proved accurate and had saved her hide on more than one occasion. She tried establishing a link, but the flares were still high and there was no reception. Nothing but static. Foul manner loomed in the distance, completely dominating the surrounding landscape. Holly scanned the building with her thermal bar and found nothing but insect and small rodent life forms. Spiders and mice. Nobody home. That suited her fine. She landed on the head of a particularly gruesome stone gargoyle and settled in to wait. Fowl Manor, Dublin, Ireland. The original Fowl Castle had been built by Lord Hugh Fowl in the 15th century, overlooking low-lying country on all sides, a tactic borrowed from the Normans, never let your enemies sneak up on you. Over the centuries, the castle had been extensively remodeled until it became a manor, but the attention to security remained. The manor was surrounded by meter-thick walls and wired with a state-of-the-art security system. Butler pulled off the road, opening the estate gates with a remote. He glanced back at his employer's pensive face. Sometimes he thought that, in spite of all his contacts, informants, and employees, Artemis Fowl was the loneliest boy he'd ever met. "We could bring a couple of those fairy blasters," he said. Butler had relieved LEP Retrieval 1 of their weaponry during the previous year's siege. Artemis nodded. "Good idea. But remove the nuclear batteries and put the blasters in a bag with some old games and books. We can pretend they're toys if we're captured."
"Yes, sir. Good thinking."
The Bentley red label crunched up the driveway, activating the ground security lights. There were several lamps on in the main house. These were on random alternating timers. Butler undid his seatbelt, stepping lithely from the Bentley.
"You need anything special, Artemis?"
Artemis nodded. "Grab some caviar from the kitchen. You wouldn't believe the muck they feed us in Bartleby's for 10,000 a term." Butler smiled again. A teenager asking for caviar, he'd never get used to it. The smile withered on his lips halfway to the recently remodeled entrance. A shiver passed across his heart. He knew that feeling well. His mother used to say that someone had just walked over his grave. A sixth sense, gut instinct. There was peril somewhere. Invisible, but here nevertheless. Holly spotted the headlights raking the sky from over a mile away. Optics were no good from this vantage point. Even when the automobile's windscreen came into view, the glass was tinted, and the shadows beyond were deep. She felt her heart rate increase at the sight of Fowl's car. The Bentley wound along the avenue, flickering between the rows of willow and horse chestnut. Holly ducked instinctively, though she was completely shielded from human eyes. Couldn't be certain with Artemis Fowl's manservant. Last year, Artemis had cannibalized a fairy helmet, constructing an eyepiece that allowed Butler to spot and neutralize an entire crack squad of LEP retrieval commandos. It was hardly likely that he was wearing the lens at the moment, but, as Trouble Kelp and his boys had learned, didn't pay to underestimate Artemis or his manservant. Holly set the neutrino to slightly above the recommended stun setting. A couple of Butler's brain cells might get fried, but she wasn't going to lose any sleep over it. The car swung into the driveway, crunching across the gravel. Butler climbed out. Holly felt her back teeth grinding. Once upon a time, she had saved his life, healing him after a mortal encounter with a troll. She wasn't sure if she'd do it again. Holding her breath, LEP Recon Captain Holly Short set the double ticks to slow descent. She dropped soundlessly, skimming past the stories, and aimed her weapon at Butler's chest. Now there was a target a sun-blinded dwarf couldn't miss. The human couldn't have detected her presence. Not possible. Yet something made him pause. He stopped and sniffed the air. The mudman was like a dog. No, not a dog. A wolf. A wolf with a big handgun. Holly focused her helmet lens on the weapon, sending a photo to her computer database. Moments later, a high-res rotating 3D image of the gun appeared in the corner of her visor. Sig Sauer, said a recorded bite of Foley's voice. 9mm, 13 in a magazine, big bullets. One of these hits you and it could blow your head off. Something even a magic can't fix. Other than that, you should be all right. Presuming you remembered to wear the regulation above-ground microfiber jumpsuit, recently patented by me. Then again, being a recon jock, you probably didn't. Holly scowled. Foley was all the more annoying when he was right. She'd jumped on the first available shuttle without even bothering to change into an above-ground suit. Holly's eyes were level with Butler's now, yet she was still hovering over a meter above the ground. She released the visor seals, wincing at the pneumatic hiss. Butler heard the escaping gas, swinging the Sig Sauer towards the source. "Theory," he said, "I know you're there. Unshield or I'll start shooting." This was not exactly the tactical advantage Holly had in her mind. Her visor was up, the manservant's finger was creaking on his pistol's hair trigger. She took a deep breath and shut down her shield. "Hello, Butler," she said evenly. Butler cocked the Sig Sauer. "Hello, Cam. Come down slowly. Don't try any of your..." "Put your gun away," said Holly, her voice layered with hypnotic mesmer. Butler fought it, the gun barrel shaking erratically. "Put it down, Butler. Don't make me fry your brain." A vein pulsed in Butler's eyelid. "Unusual," thought Holly. "Never seen that before." "Don't fight me, mudman. Give in to it." Butler opened his mouth to speak, to warn Artemis. She pushed harder, the magic cascading around the human's head. "I said put it down." A bead of sweat ran down the bodyguard's cheek. "Put it down." And Butler did, gradually and grudgingly. Holly smiled. "Good, mudman. Now, back to the car and act as though nothing's wrong." The manservant's legs obeyed, ignoring the signals from his own brain. Holly buzzed up her shield. She was going to enjoy this. Artemis was composing an email on his laptop. "Dear Principal Guiney," it read, "because of your counselor's tactless interrogation of my little Artie, I've taken him out of school for a course of therapy sessions with real professionals in the Mont Gaspard Clinic in Switzerland. I'm considering legal action. Do not attempt to contact me, as that would only serve to irritate me further, and when irritated, I generally call my attorneys. Sincerely, Angeline Fowl." Artemis sent the message, allowing himself the luxury of a small grin. It would have been nice to watch Principal Guiney's expression when he read the electronic letter. Unfortunately, the button camera he had planted in the headmaster's office could only be accessed within a mile radius. Butler opened the driver's door and, after a moment, slipped into the seat. Artemis folded his phone into its wallet.
Captain Short, I presume.
Why don't you stop vibrating and settle into the visible spectrum? Holly speckled into view. There was a gleaming gun in her hand. Guess where it was pointed.
Really, Holly, is that necessary?
Holly snorted.
Well, let's see. Kidnapping, actual bodily harm, extortion, conspiracy to commit murder. I'd say it's necessary.
Please, Captain Short, said Artemis with a smile. I was young and selfish. Believe it or not, I do harbour some doubts over that particular venture. Not enough doubts to return the gold.
No,
admitted Artemis. Not quite. How did you know I was here? Artemis steepled his fingers.
There were several clues. One, Butler did not conduct his usual bomb check under the car. Two, he returned without the items he went to fetch. Three, the door was left open for several seconds, something no good security man would permit. And four, I detected a slight haze as you entered the vehicle. Elementary, really.
Holly scowled.
Observant little mud boy, aren't you?
I try. Now, Captain Short, if you'd be so kind as to tell me why you're here.
As if you don't know. Artemis thought for a moment.
Interesting. I would guess that something has happened.
Obviously, something that I am being held responsible for.
He raised an eyebrow, fractionally, an intense expression of emotion for Artemis Fowl.
There are humans trading with the people.
Very impressive, said Holly. Or it would be if we didn't both know that you're behind it. And if we can't get the truth out of you, I'm sure your computer files will prove most revealing.
Artemis closed his laptop's lid.
Captain, I realize there is no love lost between us, but I don't have time for this now. It is imperative that you give me a few days to sort out my affairs.
No can do, Fowl. There are a few people below ground who would like a word.
Artemis shrugged. I suppose after what I did, I can't really expect any consideration.
That's right, you can't.
Well then, sighed Artemis, I don't suppose I have a choice.
Holly smiled.
That's right, Fowl, you don't.
Shall we go?
Artemis's tone was meek, but his brain was sparking off ideas. Maybe cooperating with the fairies wasn't such a bad idea. They had certain abilities, after all.
Why not?
Holly turned to Butler.
Drive south. Stay on the back roads.
Tara, I presume.
I often wondered where exactly the entrance to E1 was.
Keep wondering, mud boy, muttered Holly.
Now sleep.
All this deduction is wearing me out.